Good morning. Thank you so much for coming out and for having me, and especially for the enthusiasm. Just wanted to get this year started, really, as I said, very beautiful. This series is called the Meet the Mefarshim series, the Mefarshim commentaries on the Torah. If there's anything that I say that needs to be clarified, translated, please let me know. I'm happy to just take questions and explain things further. Meet Mefarshim is meet the commentaries. Right? We know we open up a Chumash, Mikros Gadolos, and you see there are a lot of different commentaries. It's not just the text of the Chumash on the page, and you know, sometimes we read them, we learn them, but to learn a little bit who they are, about each Mefarash, each commentary, a little bit about their background, their style, and then we're going to actually explore a bunch of comments from that particular Mefarash on that week's Parsha. So this week's Parsha is Parshas Truma, and we're going to meet the Ibn Ezra. Has anybody ever heard? I'm sure some of it. Just to get an overall, who's heard of the Ibn Ezra before? Has anybody heard of the Ibn Ezra? Okay. So it looks like just about everybody has heard of him. Maybe not everyone met him personally. Probably not, because he hasn't been around for a while. Actually, the truth is the Mefarshim live on forever, because we still read their words. We still live what they taught. But the Ibn Ezra has not physically been around for a while. Some people call him the Evan Ezra, because it's just Aleph Vez Nun, Evan, stone, but really it's Ibn, which means Ibn is son of, right? It's Arabic for the Hebrew word Ben, son of. So Ibn Ezra means that he is Ben Ezra, seemingly the son of someone named Ezra. It's actually not the case. That was really his last name. His last name was son of Ezra. His real father's name was Meir. So he was Rav Avraham Ben Meir, Ibn Ezra, right? Avram Meir with the last name like David's son, right? Not everyone whose name is David's son, his father's actually David, right? But originally, it came from somebody who was David, so that's Meir Ibn Ezra. He lived in the 11th century. It's unclear exactly when. There are different dates given. 1088, 89, 92 is the birth date, somewhere around there. Passed away around 1164, 1172, somewhere around there. It's not too far off. We don't, there are different sources that say different things. I went through Sefer Doros and alatorah.org has some nice things. And the Hakdama over here, the introduction to the, Oz V'Hadar Mikros Gadolos. So those are different sources that I use to collect some of this information, as well as some, points of that Ibn Ezra says is in his own Hakdama to the Torah, in his own introduction. He tells us, not so much biographical information, but stylistic leanings, and we'll discuss more of them inside. Does anybody know where Ibn Ezra is from? Originally, at least. So he is from Andalusia in Spain, and then he traveled to Italy at a point, and France and England. He made his way around. It seems based. He was also not just a Torah commentator, is actually really a polymath, knew many, many different, was involved in many, many, many different disciplines, not just, Torah and Chumash and Gemara, but grammar and philology and philosophy, mathematics, astronomy, astrology, poetry as well. He has several books of poetry. We actually still have some of them. We have some of his Zemiros you might be familiar with. We'll take a look at one maybe later. But he was very, very, very worldly, very knowledgeable in many different disciplines. And he incorporates a lot of that into his parish. Well, actually, just to start off, the first source over here, I'm sorry I didn't put numbers on it. Don't worry about the translations for now. The first source, it says, Hakdamas Ibn Ezra LaParshas Truma. So before he starts Parshas Truma, he says the following. V'yikuli Truma, they shall take from me Truma. Asher nasan levanav damas tmima, asher yotzi laor kol taluma. V'ineinu davar chachma rishuma, v'parshas v'yikuli Truma. What do you notice? Right, he started off with a poem. Right, that's the style. He starts off his parsha with a poem that the one who gave his children, meaning Hashem, gave the one who gave his children this wholesome, complete religion that comes into the light, everything that's hidden, they should understand the recognizable wisdom in the parsha that begins Vayikuli Truma. That's his poem. So that's part of his style, his flair coming out just in his commentary. We see that he has a parish on many different books of Tanakh. And some actually, he has a couple of perushim on certain svarim. He has one called the it's referred to as the Perusha Katsar, the short, the abridged version on a couple of the books of the Torah. And he has, but he also has a long one, which is the one that's printed in most of our chumashim. And we'll, maybe we'll take a look inside. We'll see some of what he has to say, and then we'll learn more about his style as we go through it. So the second source over here. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'yikhu li truma. Hashem says to Moshe, speak to the Jewish people and collect truma. Meaning over here doesn't mean the you know, what we typically hear as truma. It means a portion of your property, and you're going to be donating it to building an important place. Does anyone know the important place in Parshas Truma that is built? Mishkan, right? The Mishkan, right? The tabernacle is going to be built in this week's parsha. Va'asli mikdash reshachanti besocham. Hashem says, "Build for me a mikdash, a location of dedicated to holiness and a meeting place, and I will dwell among them." Which is often interpreted, it could be I think the truest interpretation is dwell among the Jewish people. So, what's the purpose of it? So if you take a look at the next source, again, I'm sorry I didn't number it, the source number three, Ibn Ezra al-Shamos. So, this is a post that we just quoted, Vayidaber, and he spoke, so Vayiba'aloso el-Rosh Hahar, when he went up the mountain, right, just to retrace our steps a little bit, where we are in the Parsha, so we were learning about Yisro and Mishpatim, these two Parshios are about Matan Torah. Moshe is up on the mountain. It's a little bit hard to understand the exact sequence of events. The chronology is challenging in Yisro Mishpatim because we know 2 weeks ago we learned about the Ten Commandments. We had the Aseret Dibros. And then last week there was Naaseh V'Nishma where we said we will do and we will hear and we sealed a covenant with God, the Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant. And it's a little bit challenging to figure out the exact order and the Mefarshim take a lot of time to try to explain that. But it seems that what Moshe is being told right now is at the top of the mountain, on Har Sinai, the summit, he is talking to, Hashem is talking to him. And Hashem says, Ba'lo so el rosh ahar, daber lo al devar ha-mishkan. He told him about the Mishkan, says Ibn Ezra, that this all took place, even though last week it's unclear, is he up, is he down? He told him these instructions for the Mishkan when he was on Har Sinai. Vahatam, and the reason is, does anybody know an explanation? Why do we build the Mishkan? Has anybody heard of an interpretation of what the purpose of the Mishkan is?
Rashi in Mukta Mukhar is a response to Egel's
Zahar. Okay, very good. So excellent. Rashi says, in Mukta Mukhar Batorah, there is no specific chronology in the Torah, and therefore it's actually a response, and this is an opinion that this is an approach that the Sarno champions, that the Mishkan is an atonement for Chetah Egel, the sin of the golden calf. That and you see, if you look carefully through a lot of the details and a lot of the gold that's used, and it was misappropriated, and now it's trying to be reappropriated properly, and having kind of like a physical, I want to be careful about using the term intermediary, but a physical manifestation of where we can connect to God, which was not done properly by the ego, and we worship the golden calf. So they explain at length how it's a response and it's not in proper order, right? Because that happens in 2 weeks, Parsha, right? Truma and Tetzaveh talk about the instructions to build the Mishkan and to make the big tekahuna, the clothing that the Kohanim would wear, and then to go through the whole inauguration ceremony of the Mishkan, and then we get to Parshas Kisisa in 2 weeks' time, and that's where we see Chetah Egel, the sin of the golden calf, and then the next Parshios, they actually build the Mishkan in Vayakel and Pekudei. That's a very classical understanding, because anything Rashi says is an instant classic. That's what we know and what we're familiar with, and sometimes if you hear something a little bit different, any other approach, not what Rashi says, so it's a little bit shocking, off the beaten path, but it's really found in many of our sources. So let's see what Ibn Ezra says. He says, V'hatam, and the reason is, we're still in source 3, right before the colon, She'asu mikdash l'shem ha'nichbad, to make a mikdash, a location, a sanctuary, for the honored name, for Hashem, v'shkan besocho, and he'll dwell in it, Visham yidaber im Moshe velo yale el hahar. And there he's going to speak to Moshe And he doesn't have to go up the mountain every time. Can you imagine if every time Hashem needed to tell Moshe something, Moshe would have to go back to Midbar Sinai and climb up the mountain, and then Hashem would communicate with him there? It's really inconvenient. So what do? So you create a place that wherever you are in the desert, wherever you are on your journey to Israel, and once you enter Israel, Moshe can go there and then connect. Right? I refer to the Mishkan as was a traveling one, so I like to call it the pack and pray. Right?
So, there's an exhibit, I think, in Israel about that they show it.
For the
down and it shows it.
Oh, right. So yeah, for the Beis Hamikdash, yeah, which is similar. The Beis Hamikdash was a more permanent place. The Mishkan had more of a tent. It was called an ohel, more of a tent structure.
How it moves around.
Oh, the Mishkan itself. Okay, very cool. So yeah, it's the pack and pray. Right, you're able to pack it up, set it up here, pray, connect to God. God communicates to you, and then you pack it up and move to the next place. So even Ezra's telling us, no, it's not. It has nothing to do with the Chet HaEgel. It's that Hashem wanted a place that he could communicate without making Moshe, you know, get on the hiking boots every single time he wanted to talk and going up the mountain again. Dear Tachtonim, as we say, right? Because we're on the road to Adar, we're already between Shabbos and Varchim Adar and Rosh Chodesh Adar itself. So some of the Rebbes point out that Adar is actually Aleph Dar, that the Aleph, the one, the Alufo Sha'olam, the chief of the world, is Dar. That he has a dwelling place, and dira batachtonim, as we said, right, to live amongst us. So that's actually the entire, the Rebbe's point out, it's the entire avoda, everything we're trying to accomplish during Adar is to bring Hashem into our daily lives and to feel his presence among us, even if he is hidden. So you know, can't hold back from getting the mindset for Purim. So thank you. The next source I want to take a look at, this is actually from last week's parsha. I apologize, or 2 weeks ago, but I couldn't not bring it because I think it's very interesting, very important to see also part of his approach in general, Ibn Ezra. So first of all, he can be harif. He can be very strong and a little harsh, especially when it's with people who go against the Mesorah, which is a little bit ironic because sometimes he seems to say things that deviate from what we typically understand to be the Mesorah. But we're going to take a look at what he says. In his programmatic introduction to his commentary in the Torah, so he talks about a few, he lays out his methodology and says he rejects basically four distinct approaches to biblical analysis. And one of them is Christian allegorical and typological interpretations. He says they don't match the literal understanding of the text. He also rejects, at least for his purposes, the approach of the Gaonim, the rabbis who lived basically from 600 to 1050 before. He says that their philosophical treatises that he didn't feel were essential to understanding the text of the Chumash itself. And a lot of what Chazal say, he did not incorporate. Chazal stands for Chachamim Zechron Levracha, or Chachminu Zechron Levracha, our sages of blessed memory. These are meaning the rabbis of the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Midrashim. He didn't incorporate most of what they said. He felt that, you know, you could see that there. Check it out, right? You don't have to dispose of, right? The Rambam says, you know, you can focus on my work. You don't have to worry about some of the other things that came before so much. Ibn Ezra said, no, check it out. Keep your Gemara. Don't have to sell your Gemara. Keep it. Check it out. Read everything there. But over here, if you want to understand the simple understanding of the text, that's what I'm focusing on. But one approach that he mentions he does not like at all are the explanations of the Karayim, the Karaites, what they understand to be a literal interpretation, rejecting the Mesorah, the tradition of the sages. So he quotes a lot of them and then rejects them. So we'll take a look at source 4 over here. Ibn Ezra Shemos Chaf Gimel. I'm not sure if that's actually right. It might be. No, sorry. On yours it says Chaf Beis, but I think the correct one is Chaf Gimel. So it says, V'lo saleh b'ma'alos al mizbechi. This is from the end of Parshas Yisro. It says, you shall not go up b'ma'alos al mizbechi. What does that mean? B'ma'alos seems to be steps, right? On my mizbeach. When you go to my mizbeach, don't have steps. What should you have instead? A ramp. Why? Right? Asher lo sigala erva sacha alav, so that you should not reveal your erva, your nakedness upon it, for tznius. for modesty. So right, it's better to have a ramp so that you're not, you know, stretching out your legs in a place that in a way that's disrespectful to the mizbeach. So we have a ramp instead of steps. Okay. So now let's take a look at what Ibn Ezra says. He says, "Lo sala." So Amar ben, I think this is a mistake. This is the site I copied it from. It says ben zita, but I think in the Makaros Gadol it says ben zuta. Ben zuta, who was a Karaite, so he said, Amar ben zuta. Ben zuta says, "Ki ba'malos migizras ma'al." What's the word ma'alos come from? It comes from ma'al. What does ma'al mean? Me'ila. Me'ila? Me'ila. Me'ila means trespassing. It's a trespass is a typical English translation of me'ila. An application of the halachos, the iser of me'ila, the prohibition of me'ila, is benefiting from property that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and using it for your own personal use. That's considered a trespass against God. It's called me'ila, ma'al. So Ben Zuta, the Karaite, says that it's ma'al, not ma'alos, that there are steps. Ma'alos comes from the shoresh of alos, aliyah, right? You know, someone goes up for an aliyah. Aliyah means going up. Someone makes aliyah, right? We want to give an neshama, an aliyah. So this is al, on, up. That's ma'alos. Steps are things that bring you al, on things. He says, no, it's me'ila, it's trespass. Vahalo, so he says, even as a vahalo pikech enav liros, are his eyes not open to see ki mem ma'al shoresh, that the mem of the word me'ila of ma'alos is, of the word me'ila is shoresh, is the shoresh, meaning it's not, right, the word me'ila, mem is not a prefix. Mem is not something that is attached that could be dropped. And the word me'ila, mem is part of the root of the word. So he says doesn't he see? Is he blind? He cannot see this. Kumo umalebo ma'al, and he quotes a pasuk about Midbar. Say about Midbar umalebo ma'al. V'hine ma'al b'mishkal na'al. V'loshen rabim she'enenu samoch v'nalos balos b'mutalos. He quotes another pasuk. Now he says v'hine ro'oi lios b'malos. Should be malos chirik tachas abeis v'kama tachas ayin, demonstrating his knowledge of diktuk. And now we're on the second to last line of the source. V'hine chishav ben zuta la los pesulam chachma behavalav, and behold, chishav ben zuta la los. Ben zuta was hoping to la alos to ascend. Basulam chachma behavalav on the sulam of his chachma, on the ladder of wisdom with his nothingness, right? He was hoping to ascend. V'niglasa ervaso alav, and his nakedness was revealed on it. Hear that? That's a strong expression. He says he's so clever. This pasuk, we read the pasuk as, "You shall not ascend on steps on the mizbeach, so that you do not reveal the nakedness on it." He says he tried to ascend the ladder of wisdom, but with his nothingness, but he ends up revealing his nakedness on it. So he's a very, very strong terminology, and you see this several times throughout his commentary. There's one in Ben Yitzchaki. It's not Rashi, but he calls him Yitzchaki, and he says Hachi Kara Shemo Yitzchaki. Is this why his name is sefer is called Yitzchaki? Because everyone laughs at his sefer. Yitzchak means to laugh, right? So he says is his sefer called I know why his sefer is called Yitzchaki, because everyone laughs at his sefer because his ridiculous interpretations. So he has a lot of these strong terms. A lot of them are very, very clever, but you see that he was very, very dedicated to what he understood to be the tradition. We'll take a look at another source. This is V'oros Eilim Adamim V'oros Tchashim V'atzei Shitim. So these are things that were used for the supplies for the Mishkan. Various skins, red skins, the skins of something called Tachash. And then there's Atzei Shitim, which is often translated as cedar wood or acacia wood, something like that. So V'atzei Shitim, now the last source on the first page. V'atzei Shitim, Yesh Mikadmo Neinu. There are those from our kadmoninu, the ones that came before us, meaning our tradition, that said Yaakov Avinu planted them. right? Because you have to wonder, right? Where did they get these massive planks of wood, of cedar wood? Where do they get that from? They're traveling in the desert. And so therefore, they say Yaakov Avinu planted them. That was a long time ago. When Yaakov Avinu had a 17-year stay, the end of his life, in Egypt, so he planted cedar trees. Yaakov Avinu, with his foresight, realized that we're going to need it. He planted the cedar trees. V'Yisrael hotziyu mimitzrayim b'mitzvas Moshe. And the Jewish people took them out of Mitzrayim with the commandments of Moshe. And this, actually, we see is quoted in Rashi. This is Rashi quoting Chazal.
If he took trees from Egypt and moved them into Israel.
That Yaakov planted them in Israel. Right. Sorry, in Egypt, I'm sorry.
Planted them in Egypt.
And then a couple hundred years later, when Yaakov had already passed away much, much earlier, and the Jewish people were finally leaving Egypt, and so it changes the image, right? If anybody saw the Ten Commandments, when they're crossing this Yom Sof, you probably, right in the movie, you probably didn't notice the part where they're carrying big things of trees, but that's what.
So it was done by mule or something like that?
Or the really, really strong guys in the back, I don't know. Yeah.
Hard to believe that a truck did it.
Okay, yeah. Right. So no, it could wagons, whatever they had. I mean, what they were able to build back in the day. You see the pyramids. I don't know if the Jews built them per se. Some suggest they do. Some say Pi Samaram says the storage cities are actually pyramids. I don't know. But they were able to build very impressive structures, and they had some sort of technology that helped them get there. Yeah, for sure. Had to. So anyway, that's what it says. The haraya, and a proof for support. V'chol asher nimsa ito. The pasuk says, this is in Vayakel, when they're actually building the Mishkan. So it says everyone would bring what they had. So everyone who had, you know, tchelas, blue wool would bring it. Anyone who had gold would bring it. Silver would bring it. And it said anyone who had atzei shittim, who had this cedar wood, anyone who had it with them. Meaning just like whoever. So it says whoever had wood with them. It didn't say that they would go cut them down in a nearby place. It said whoever had it with them. So presumably they already had the stuff with them. Just like they had the gold and the silver and the wool and the spices. They already had those things with them when they left Egypt. So presumably they had the cedar wood as well. And he says that's the support that some use for this idea that the cedar trees were planted by Yaakov Avinu and then brought with them to Mitzrayim. And it says, or really I should say, asks Ibn Ezra, V'yesh litzmoa, but you really should wonder, Loma ne'mar asher nimsa ito, letzarko. Why does it say that was found with him? It's for his need, meaning it sounds like they already had wood, they just happened to have wood with them. Vima Marnu Kane, but if we say that, Yesh Latzmoa, you really have to wonder. Lama Hotziu Atze Shitim, Kimat Sarach Yeshlehem. Why would they have brought the wood with them? Meaning the implication is that you already have wood with you, and so, oh good, perfect. Can you just take some of that wood and donate it to the Mishkan? That would be really, really nice of you, really generous. So why would they have it with them? The Ode, and also furthermore, Hine Hamitzrim Choshvim Kilazevach Hem Holchim. The Egyptians thought that they were just going to bring karbanos, right? That's the way Ibn Ezra and others understand it. That the Jewish people, when they were first leaving Mitzrayim, Paro wasn't giving them he wasn't firing them. He didn't give them permission. Okay, you guys are fine. You go. He said you can go for 3 days to bring karbanos. So if Paro would see them carrying these massive, massive things of wood, like that would be strange. V'yachar ken yeshuvu. Now, he thought they're going to go to the desert for a few days, have a holiday, bring sacrifice, and come back. V'al ken hashilum. They would have asked ve'ech yotziu krushim rabim arach kol achad asar amos. How would they bring out these massive beams? Each one is 11 amos, could be close to 22 feet. These really big gambrichim, all these crossbars. V'hema avru al Mitzrayim makom hamalucha, and they're going to go. You know, in Mitzrayim, past the palace, umahayisa teshuva sam l'sholem. And what would have been their response to the ones who had asked them, lomo yolichu atzei shitim? Why are you, hey Jewish people, why are you bringing those massive trees with you? V'heim holchim, next page, l'zevach derech shlosh yomim. I thought you guys are only going for 3 days. It looks like you're planning on building a house. V'hine lo yadanu. So basically, Ibn Ezra says, this is really hard to understand. If you're going to take this literally, this is really, really hard to understand. Just trying to play it back into the story. The Jewish people, did they know why they were taking it? Most like, okay, everyone, wait, before we leave, we're about to be free, we have to leave Egypt. Before we leave, can everyone just get a bunch of trees? Anyone who has a spare couple of minutes, go grab a couple of trees, bring it with you. And then what would the Egyptians have said? What are you guys doing? You're going for 3 days. You're taking all these trees. What slaves running to freedom bring giant trees with them? And they don't know. So even it's really, really hard for me to understand. He says, now, this next line is packed. V'hine lo yadanu. Behold, we don't know. Im Kabbalah hi, if it's Kabbalah. Now, when Ibn Ezra says Kabbalah, he doesn't mean like Kabbalah. He doesn't mean Jewish mysticism. He means Kabbalah, the Masorah, Masoras, tradition. If it's a specific tradition that we have, Biyad Avosenu, in the hands of our fathers, Shem Mitzrayim Hotziyum, that our forefathers brought out of Egypt, we'll listen to them. He says, I am ready to submit. If you tell me that we have a real tradition from our forefathers, our ancestors, when they came out of Mitzrayim, they brought the cedar wood. He says, I'll submit. However, v'im derech svara. But if this is a svara, if this was not a bona fide tradition, mesora that we had, but there was like, you know, they were like, you know, shooting the breeze, trying to suggest, maybe this one, maybe that's a possibility. He said, if this is just derech svara, yesh levakesh derech archeres. You got to find another option. That can't be. And then he proceeds to explain another possibility. He says maybe it was that next to Har Sinai there was a forest with Atzei Shittim, or some, I don't know, some oasis, little forest area somewhere in the desert. Right? Not all of the desert looks like, you know, what we might imagine from you know, pictures and movies of like everything is you know, sand as far as the eye can see. In some areas, yes. Some areas, no. So maybe there's a forest nearby, and they took it from there. And he says that there was no, and you know, they're going to be delayed for a while, and there was no cloud on them. Kasher perashti, which is like I explained. This is Ibn Ezra referring to another comment. How long did they have the clouds of glory around them? The clouds of glory, the Anani HaKavod. How long did the Jewish people have them for? Right, so Chazal understand it as until Aaron died, meaning basically the entire almost the whole entire 40-year journey. Ibn Ezra does not understand it that way. He thinks that it was a very, very short term. It's actually Gemara in Maseches Sukkah. Why we have, right? Maybe you might be familiar with this. Why do we have the Sukkos? Why do we have a Sukkah on Sukkos? Right, two possibilities. Okay, so they either Anane HaKavod, it symbolizes the clouds of glory, or it's called Sukkos Mamash, Sukkos. They built real Sukkos. And Ibn Ezra says that that's really what they had. They only had the first 7 days or so, they had clouds of glory, and then after that, they built their own Sukkos. Then this is not how Chazal understand it, but this is what Ibn Ezra says. Rashbam, others do suggest this as well. So he says over here that they built Sukkos. They went to the forest. They built Sukkos. They got wood. They were building their own little huts. And then they also had lots of wood to bring for the Mishkan. So that's a suggestion. Ibn Ezra doesn't know this for sure. He's speculating. He says, I need to come up with a pshat. Here's a suggestion. Take it or leave it. Because if that other pshat is not traditional, even though it's traditional, but it's not traditional, then I don't buy it. Right? Meaning like if my father makes something up and then I do, so that's not, is it traditional or is it not? Kind of, right? It's like my father's tradition, but it's not a tradition for my grandfather, my great grandfather, my great 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 grandfather. So he says, I'm not sure if I can identify that statement as, is that Chazal? Is that what Chazal have a tradition for? Or they were speculating just like what I'm doing now. A little bit of a controversial way to understand it, but also you see that he's willing to submit to the Masorah if he's true. If he can for sure you know, clarify that this is the tradition, so he sticks to it for sure. He's not sure if that's what it is. So I think you see the two sides of his dedication to tradition and something that might be viewed as a little bit controversial. Okay, and then he says, "Oh, zasa kol echad sukkah," and then everyone made a sukkah. Okay, I think we got that part. Okay, we'll do a little bit more. Okay, so go for it. So we'll do a job more, maybe if a couple more minutes. So v'dibarti is kol asher tzaveh osochel b'nei Yisrael. I'm not even going to go through the. So. We'll take a look at this one shot of the Ibn Ezra. I'm not even going to read the whole thing. This is that longer one on the page. This is talking about the Mizbeach HaKetores, right? The golden altar is actually not mentioned with the rest of the items in the Mishkan. You'll take a look at this week's Parsha. You're going to see everything else. You're going to see the menorah, the Shulchan, the Aron, all of these items. The Mizbeach HaKetores, the golden altar, is saved for next week's parsha at the end, Parsha Tetzaveh. And Ibn Ezra is wondering, like basically all the commentators do, why is that? So we'll just go to the second paragraph. V'yesh l'tmoa. You see that? V'yesh l'tmoa. We'll just do the relation with l'tmoa. Lama lo hiskir mizbeach ha-ketores. Why doesn't it mention the mizbeach ha-ketores? V'atshuva k'derech mashal. He said, I'll bring a mashal to try to explain it. Here's a parable. Ki akavo lo yanus, I think in the Mikra Skidol it says lo yamush, that the honor of Hashem is not going to be moving away. Al kein, therefore, ha'aron demus kisei. The aron is in the form of a kisei. It's a kisei? A chair, a throne. The aron, it kind of looks like it, right? You can imagine, right, with the armrests of the kruvim, the angels, right? So you can kind of see this as some sort of kisei. And obviously, no one's allowed to sit on it. Whose throne is it? God's throne, so to speak, right? God's throne. And then it says that there's a kisei, v'hinei menorah v'shulchan aruch. And behold, there is a candelabra and a set table. So if you, so he says basically, take the imagery of the inner sanctuary. So you see the aron, a shulchan, and a menorah. You see like a big throne. And a candelabra and a table. You know what it looks like? It's like a little apartment. Looks like an apartment, right? Place to sit and sleep. A place to eat. A little bit of lights. What's that imagery of a little apartment? That someone's living there. That dear B'tachtonim. Hi, I live here. Oh, this is my apartment. We built an apartment for Hashem. And therefore he says, and he says, that's why the Mizbeach HaKetores is not part of this imagery. It has a different role. What it is, I don't want to get into now, but it has a little bit of a different role. And then he mentions, it's mentioned after the Mizbeach HaOla, because he doesn't want people, he didn't want people to get confused and bring karbonos that they're not supposed to bring on that. But we'll just hold off on that. Let's just do these last couple of sources. They're short. V'nasata ala shulchan lechem panim lifanai tamid. And you will place them on the shulchan, lechem panim, to be before me always. Lechem panim, right? We know lechem hapanim, also lechem panim. What does lechem panim mean? Lechem hapanim, face bread, right? The bread. So the bread of faces is a classic interpretation. Rashi says it's the panim that like from faces from different sides. But let's take a look at what Ibn Ezra says. Vinasata al derech pshat nikra lechem hapanim. It's called lechem panim b'havor perush shehu acharav, because of the explanation that comes after it. What does that mean? It's maybe the explanation that comes after it. So what he means is in the pasuk itself. Go back to that pasuk. Unasan al shulchan lechem panim lifanai tamid. He says, before me always is the interpretation of what lechem panim is. That panim is an expression of lifanai, of before me. That lifanai tamid means God says they're before me always, meaning that they're ever present. So lechem hapanim, says Ibn Ezra, is basically, I would translate it as ever present bread. It is ever present bread, not bread of faces, not like Rashbam who says it's like a beautiful, you know, showbread, some might interpret it, that it looks nice, like upon him, as good, a shine upon him, right? A beautiful face. That it's a beautiful bread or a bread of faces. No, no. He says it is a bread, it is ever-present bread. It's lechem upon him. What are lechem upon him? Lifanai tamid. You know, they're upon him. They're present. They're always before me. And we actually see this in a pismon, in a zemer, Shabbos zemer, Kiryas Shmirah Shabbos. Does anybody ever sing this one? Kiryas Shmirah Shabbos? Right? So Kiryas Shmirah Shabbos is actually written by none other than Rav Avraham Ibn Ezra himself. Right? So, right? And he, how do you know? Because if you look at the first letter in each paragraph, right? So it's Asur Mesochefetz, Asur is Aleph, Boem Satamid, Beis, Rasham Badas HaKel, Resh, Hu Yom Mechubad Hu, Hey, Machal Melacha Bo, Mem, Aleph Beis Reish Hey Mem Avraham, he signed his name in it. There's also Zemer Tzama Nafshi that you might see in, if you have like the bonus edition of Zmiros, you might have that one in there. But Kiryas Shmirah Shabbos, that's one of the Zmiros that really made it, and he signs his name in it, Avraham, to Avraham Ibn Ezra. So what does he say? So Rosham Badas Hakel Chok Elskanav Bolaroch Lechem Panim Bifanav, right? For the Saganav, his Skanim, his Kohanim, so he arranged Lechem Panim Lefanav, bread on his, bread of faces before him. Meaning, it seems that Ibn Ezra is going Lishitaso. He's going to, according to his own understanding, as he explained on the Chumash, that's what comes out in his zemer that we read I don't sing every Shabbos, we switch off which ones we sing, but I sing many Shabbosos, so we're singing an interpretation of Ibn Ezra in his poem that he wrote. So we see that it really comes out, and actually through a lot of Zmiros, there's a lot to look in. That's like a separate series. That's Kedai, just to learn the beauty and depth of the Zmiros. But just to see Ibn Ezra, you know, come full circle. That we started off with a poem of the Ibn Ezra. We ended off with a poem of the Ibn Ezra. We see his brilliance. There's obviously so much more to see, so much more biographical information. But I heard everyone has to have lunch at some point, so I don't want to hold everyone too long. But to see. How amazing it is to have so much knowledge and to be able to put it and organize it and articulate it in this cryptic way that makes us pour over it so much. But Baruch Hashem, I think we were zocha a little bit, at least our first meeting with the Ibn Ezra. Yeah. Did everybody have a least